Hey ladies, it's Natasha here with the latest edition of Amplified. We're really excited today because we are joined by Hillary New Sinclair. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, Natasha. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Hillary has forged a career developing loyalty and B2C marketing programs for Fortune 500 companies such as Avon, Yahoo, Visa, Kraft Foods, Lexus, eBay. She's an avid product searcher and has a passion for making the world a better place by using technology to create easier and more positive user experiences. Welcome to Amplified.
Thank you. Thank you. So glad to be here today.
So we're excited to learn about your work that you're doing and everything. Are you based in California?
We are. We're based in the Redwood City area, which is just south of San Francisco.
Have you guys been safe and everything from the wildfire?
Fortunately, yes. We've seen some of it, and you sometimes get a little bit of a in your throat
because of
the smoke coming. But fortunately, we've been safe and sound down there. But those poor people, oof.
Yeah, very, very scary and sad. Some of the things that they've been dealing with. Are you originally from California?
No, I'm a Dallas girl. Born and raised.
Oh, wow. How long have you been living in California?
I've been there about 19 years. I went out there. I went to school on the East Coast, and my best friend from school basically recruited me out to San Francisco during the dot-com boom. Mm-hmm. And there I've stayed. There were a couple of opportunities here and there to go to New York or Chicago, Dallas, et cetera. And then something always kept me in the Bay Area. And then I met my husband, and here we are.
Oh, wow. So you feel like a California native now.
Yes, exactly. There's it's a wonderful place to be. No place is perfect, but it's got a lot of bonus pluses and pluses there. So we love it.
I feel like I have to give California another shot. I went when I was about 19, 20-ish. It was like the year 2000. And it was like freakishly cold. It went in February, and there were, you know, so many people were like, "I normally like this." So I'm like, "Oh, really?" The time that I come, you know,
oh my God.
Like, I got to get back out there and try it again. But I loved it. I definitely love the Santa Monica area.
Yes.
So definitely have to give it another go. But we're so excited to have you here today. You know, you have such a unique and extensive background and marketing, and you know, when I look at your resume, you're covering things like you've been doing things with online marketing campaigns, landing pages, press releases, field marketing shows. I mean, it's so much. And then you know, obviously went also from marketer to founder, which we'll talk about a little later on.
Sure.
Even now, though, since you've transitioned into being a founder, do you still feel like you're a marketer at heart?
I am. Oh, for sure. It's funny. It's I almost, you know, we women go through the imposter syndrome. It's like, do I really know what I think I know?
Right. And, oh, yeah.
And so as a founder, that for me is like, wow, am I a founder? Am I an entrepreneur? The first time I introduced myself, and they said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I'm an entrepreneur." I felt like such a fraud. But I was like, wait a minute, I'm building a company. No, this is really true.
It's true.
So that stretch has been harder for me, but my marketing hat is squarely on my head. We have built WeSearch with the intention to have marketing be at the forefront in our design of the whole platform. And so that's really been fun because throughout my whole career, I've worked on so many B2C platforms and designs for things, and positive user experience, easy to use, you know, reducing the number of clicks, all those things that we think about to increase conversion, increase retention, and increase engagement is definitely at play here. So finally, I got to kind of do an etch-a-sketch and start over and do it exactly like we've always wanted to do, because sometimes we've been a little hindered in the marketing world, but my marketing hat is always on with everything we do, and it's marketing from how we can talk to the business community, especially investors and so on. So how do we tell that story? as well as how do we tell the story to our other two audiences, which are beauty fans everywhere and video creators that we work with. So it's I've always got those multiple audiences in my head when we're moving forward on initiatives.
And I love that, too, what you just said, because I think so often if you talk to particularly early-stage entrepreneurs about marketing, they think about, okay, an ad that I might need to design or a Facebook ad or all these other things, but leaving out the fact that, hey, when you are talking about your business to somebody else, that is marketing, too, you know? and so I love that because sometimes I think we might half-ass our story, our startup story, when we're telling it to somebody else, and that is a wasted marketing opportunity.
Exactly. I mean, and I feel a little sensitive about it, especially because we're in the fundraising zone right now. And I was talking to one of my girlfriends, old roommate, you know, from 20 odd years ago, et cetera. And I said, oh, and, you know, she's asking about work, and I was telling her, and I said, oh, and we're also in the fundraising zone. So, you know, if you know of anybody that likes to invest in tech companies, we'd love to talk to them. And she that was the one sentence I said, and she jumped and she said, yeah, I do know some people. My husband probably knows some people too. And then, like, I waited a day or two because I didn't want her to feel pressured. You know, we women, we want to make sure that everybody's happy, you know, in the nest kind of thing. And she followed up with me. She's like, send me your stuff to the company. I was like, well, okay then. So I did. And anyway, and her husband may be connecting me with somebody. So that's really great. But you're right. It's a constant marketing. Even if you're at a party or at some other kind of networking event, I mean, you got to kind of put it out there. And, you know, like all good marketers, you test and you try to gauge your audience about which angle they're going to like the best and which one might resonate with them based on who they are. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And sharing your needs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You didn't tell her that, she wouldn't be able to make that connection for you.
Exactly. Yeah, she would have never come out and put that on her own. I mean, it was a social call. Exactly.
And so, you know, obviously marketing is crucial for all businesses, whether you're a Fortune 500 company, as you know, or an early stage startup. And, you know, for startups, I find that even just through our own experience, you use marketing obviously to find your customers, but also to sell to your customers. And in your experience, when somebody is launching, you know, an early stage startup, where should they begin? Like, what are some of the basics that they should be thinking about when it comes to marketing their startup?
So that's a great question. And I'll tell you a little bit what I've seen and then where I think people should go. So some of the stuff I've seen is that marketing is an afterthought. And especially in the tech world, that product, it's all about product. It's a cool idea. It's the neat bells and whistles that the tech is going to do. And don't get me wrong, tech does beautiful things. And I'm a huge fan. I've staked my career on it. But if you're not thinking about the story that you've got to tell and or the knowledge that you want to glean from the user experience, you've missed a massive opportunity. And so coming into the design of your business and your business idea, you have to think about not just, I'm solving X, I'm solving this problem, like with research, you know, shopping is broken, we are solving shopping, especially for makeup, starting there.
Right.
But that's not all there is, because people have to engage with you, they have to engage with you on an emotional level or some sort of pain point that's really prevalent for them, not just like, hey, this is cool, and then they go on to the next thing that's, hey, this is cool. That's not your story. So you have to really get into who are the people, the personas, like for us, for example, you know, millennial Carly, she is shopping and wasting money and returning it in the landfills with makeup situation because it's broken. And so that's part of the story. And then when we design the product, when founders design the product, what knowledge do you need to tell your marketing story again and again and again and again? And how do you glean that knowledge from what you see? And part of it's analytics, and part of it is just how do you make sure that you're watching what people do and then you can tell your story again? So when we design research, for example, I had marketing always in the forefront, and I've written tons of case studies, and I've done lots of analytics and strategies and stuff like that. I was like, what knowledge do I need to get to further refine my story to make sure that I can hit my target audiences or shape my target audience? And so with research, we constantly get information about what are the top criteria that people are interested in makeup. And coverage, if you can believe it, for example, coverage, good quality pigmentation of makeup is more important than price. A lot of people think it's just price, even the millennials or whatever. Coverage is our top one. Price is high in some categories, but that's not it. So then I can tell my story better because I know that coverage is important to people. And we can focus on that. Or, what are some of the problems that have been solved through some of the searches that that people use in our system? I can know what people are putting in our search engine. And so then we can say, this is what problems people are trying to solve. Let's go use that for marketing in our story. So tons of data, and we look at it and we're easily gathering it. And then I can easily, we've also had it be an interface because I do not speak code. I understand a little bit, but I don't speak HTML or SQL either, but I know enough to be dangerous about how do I get the knowledge back out that will really help me do the marketing story. So that's a very long answer to your question.
No, it's great because a part of what you're saying is about, getting that intel and that information from the jump first. I know for us here at Lioness, when we really did some in-depth customer development interviews, essentially, they gave us our marketing language. We like to go a little far here. So my co-founder and I, we went and we locked ourselves in a boardroom, and we literally wrote down all of the answers to the questions that each woman had given us. These were like over 100 women. And we circled every similarity that we could find in all of the answers and use that to create our marketing language, because essentially they told us how to talk to them,
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they're basically giving you the breadcrumbs or the guidelines to do it. And you just have to, make sure that you're able to listen with the right ears, so to speak.
Yeah. And then it's like, so you get that information, you get that language, and it's like, now, how do I wisely use that information to market to them? Like, a good example is we had a founder reach out to us the other day, a female founder, and she said, hey, I was presented with this opportunity to get a TV spot, and I don't know if I should purchase the opportunity. Now, me, my expertise is not in television advertising, so I couldn't say yes, definitely do it, and I couldn't say no. I said, but I would reach out to other people who have purchased that spot just to see what some of their results are. Start doing some research so at least you can kind of make an educated decision. Your area of expertise, what are some ways that you've seen other companies waste marketing dollars?
That's a very good question. So one of the things that, in my opinion, was wasted is the whole star review system. And almost every shopping site is based on the star review system. And, of course, I'm going to talk about research, but that is a huge opportunity. And then there's companies that have risen to try to mine all those paragraphs that people write, and like Yotpo and Bizarre Voice, and try to get that knowledge. And it's like, wait a minute, it does not have to be this complicated.
Right.
And because they're relying on star reviews, which I don't know how you feel. My opinion is that star reviews are basically worthless. Between, how do I know what's important to that person is important to me, or is this, basically done through some click farm off across the ocean somewhere? So, and the gaming that a lot of the companies do to try to help, you know, say on Amazon or whatever. But anyway, so I think that the whole mining of the star system is mm-hmm. completely broken, and it's time for something different, which is one of the things that we pride ourselves on with WeSearch, is it's a completely visual interface. There's no guessing. There's no reading. There's no hiring companies to go read it for you and pull out the words, kind of like you were doing on your whiteboard,
it's
right? Where you guys are like circling the keywords. It's so time consuming. And so that's part of how we designed it, is we wanted it to be a huge differentiator, because you read it like a clock. You swipe and you read like a clock. It doesn't get much faster than that. And so that's one way, but the reality of it is they absolutely need to get that knowledge. The knowledge is there. It's just the way they're going about it is really wasteful. And then let's see. You know, I think some of the – we were talking about TV ads. I think TV ads – as a whole are dying. And I think, of course, the rise of things like Netflix and, of course, your DVR on your cable or whatever it is, like people and YouTube, people want on-demand. They want it when they want it. And they're going to surf through commercials. And I got to tell you, some of the ads that are on YouTube – you know, I'm on YouTube a lot because of our video creators, the mm-hmm. fabulous content. And so some of the ads I see there are just it's like, who approved this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you are missing your mark. So I think some of the traditional advertising, whether it be TV and, you know, basic print ads in, you know, newspapers, magazines, et cetera, I think those are going to keep being a reducing ROI or a decreasing ROI for companies.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to advertising online, like I just talked about those YouTube ads, right, because there are like some systems where obviously they're following these websites, but so, oh my gosh, Natasha, you went and you looked at Wheaties, and so now Wheaties is popping up on every other website that it goes
yes.
to. And which is funny, because to me, I get that system, but sometimes it can be failed because I'm like, I actually went to Wheaties to do X, Y, or Z. I don't eat Wheaties. You know what I'm saying? And so you're wasting your time on me. And obviously, you know, nothing's foolproof. What do you think when it comes to like online marketing or research things that you think people should always think about when they're putting together a campaign?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I see this too. For example, I recently bought a light fixture, right? And I was like looking at Lamps Plus and all these different places. And then I bought one. And yet on the ads that would show up on other websites, I'd see the Lamps Plus, you know, same light fixture. I was like, I already bought that.
My co-founder says that all the time. Exactly.
You should know that I already bought this. What are you doing? You know, I mean, you've got the data. If you know I looked at it, you should know I bought it.
Right.
And so that's another wasted opportunity, frankly. But I think, you know, people, the data gathering has gotten so sophisticated and so prevalent, and especially, you know, there's been the scandals that we all know about, such as Facebook and, you know, Experian and Yahoo and so on with data mismanagement. But, you know, data gathering can be a beautiful thing. It really can, where it helps you have a better user experience. It's where it's used to hammer you repeatedly, and again, not using, you have the data there to be personalized. Why don't you be personalized and think about the user experience? Show them what didn't get, or if they already bought this, show them something completely different, because you should know that.
Yeah.
And instead, it's just creepy and annoying and a bad user experience. And, you know, people are getting pretty sensitive about their data because there have been such bad fiascos, and including, you know, all the fake news and all the fake targeting, the targeting that happens about fake stuff too has been, it just shows that data can be easily mismanaged. But when you use it in a way that people feel heard and understood, like, mm-hmm. that's awesome. You know, if someone is going to give me through all the, you know, again, I'm an avid searcher, as you read in my bio. Mm-hmm. I do my homework because I want to know what I'm going to get, and which is why WeSearch got started. But if people can get the information that they need, if companies can get the information that they need from users, like, go the whole way. Go through, what did they do? What did they not do? Go right. through, did they make the purchase? Great. Don't show them that stuff again. Did they go there, or did they put it in their shopping cart and disappear? If they disappear, they did it for a reason. Don't keep hammering them on that. Like, trust their user experience, but gather the data. Like, okay, there's probably more than one person who left this in their cart and then they disappeared. What happened? How can you make it easier so you delight them with really personalized knowledge about them? And again, that's what we do with research based on, you know, your coloring, your preferences, your sensitivities. You're not going to get if you've got dry skin, you're not going to get a foundation served up to you that people with oily skin love. That's just going to make your face fall off. Forget it.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think that there is such a responsibility that comes with marketing on both sides, you know, from whether you're the consumer or the business that's putting it out, because just the fake news is a great example.
Yeah.
If it's tracking your algorithm and it sees that you've clicked on that stuff, so a good example is sometimes friends will say, oh, my God, did you hear such and such, or did you see that this fake story was circulating? And I say, no. Those stories don't show up in my feed because I only go to credible news sources. So because of that, it doesn't come to me. And, you know, so Facebook has like a private group that you can be a part of if you're a journalist, and you have to be approved to get in that group. And I'm in that group. And so they have a whole, you know, kind of like a training section that they've created now for journalists. The funny thing is, I'm like, you're preaching to the choir, because the people who are producing the fake news, that's happening because they're not journalists. Some of them are bloggers, and you're just blogging anything, and, you know, there's no actual attributed quotes or anything. And so, to me, I'm like, where does the responsibility fall in that type of marketing? Because those people, you didn't approve them to be in this group because they weren't credible. So how are they going to get the tips to do proper news protocol? You know what I'm saying? And so that's why I feel like marketing gets into like the gray part of the web. It's weird.
Yes. Yeah. I totally hear you. And I think, you know, frankly, I think you're really onto something about, you know, being a credible news source, and that there should be like credible marketers that have, you know, a good way of behaving, and they, you know, have certain things. I mean, you could call it, you know, to use a very extreme example, you could call it almost like the Geneva Convention of marketing, where you're like, you know, we're gonna be above board, and we're gonna make sure that the customer is always first. I mean, again, marketers, as our job is to convince you to take an action, right? Whether it be to click or buy or engage somehow, and there's nothing wrong with that, because often, as long as the consumer, I'll say the consumer, but whoever the recipient is, is winning in the sense of they're getting knowledge that they want or that they didn't have, or they're being shown a product that could be really useful for them, or they're delighted in some way, and the delight is really key, that then if marketers are doing that, then the transaction is good. And you're a good steward of your craft. But like you said, there's some companies or some systems or algorithms or what have you that just want to hammer whatever is happening, and that's terrible. I mean, we've put safeguards in WeSearch to make sure that you know, these click farms are not going to be moving our sliders for products on things coming from the same IP address. I mean, there's basic things that you can do to really be good stewards of it and make sure that the user, the end user, it always wins. Or at the very least, they're not annoyed, you know, and you're not just, you know, banging them over the head or showing, oh my gosh, I'm watching everything that you do, and so let me give you this. I mean, that's literally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, getting into research, you're a beauty industry company that combines the power of beauty videos and community-related feedback to provide users with personalized makeup recommendations. You guys were founded in January of 2016. Could you take me back a little bit to just tell me how you found, and the other thing that I recently found out was that obviously you guys also, earlier you were talking about waste, you have a social enterprise connection to yourself as well. Could you talk a little bit about why you founded WeSearch and how that got going?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is an idea, if you can believe it, that I marinated on for 10 years, and it basically follows the basic premise of how do I know what I'm going to get when I shop? Like, how do I know? And as I said earlier, the star reviews came up as a way to combat that. But I mean, there's articles about it. The average product gets 4.3 stars. Everybody gets a trophy,
oh, really?
But they're not winning. You know, yeah. Average. There's a Wall Street Journal article from a couple years ago. It's like everybody gets 4.3 stars. Well, you know what? There's a lot of crap out there.
True.
Not everybody gets a trophy because they're not doing that great. And so, how does that happen? So, anyway, but based on the premise of how do I know what I'm going to get, and then I had one of my favorite Holy Grail products. You know, one of those products that you searched high and low for and you've wasted a lot of money and maybe thrown a lot or given a lot away. You know, like it just doesn't work, and it could be, you know, that great pair of jeans or the hairspray.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it is, right? Your favorite, you know, yoga pants. I don't know. And you get it and you're like, oh, my gosh, I want, you know, I finally found it. And, you know, the sky opens and angels sing for a second, and then it gets discontinued.
Oh.
or they change the manufacturing or whatever. I mean, I've had this happen with countless products, but one of the products that I had this happen with was my favorite red lipstick. And, you know, especially for beauty lovers, I mean, the red lipstick is the bomb, right?
Yeah. When you find the right shade that goes with your skin complexion and everything,
Exactly. I found this one, and I mean, I got compliments on this lipstick, which just shows you how, you know, I never get compliments on lipstick. So that was, I don't think I've ever given a compliment on lipstick. Really. But
I love makeup and colors and everything, so no, I know what you're saying when you find the right
So anyway, so it's like perfect, this blue undertoned red, because my skin's got a lot of red in it, so I need a blue undertone for the red, and it had a tiny bit of sparkly glitter in there. It was just perfect.
Oh, interesting,
right?
Yeah.
And then it got discontinued. So then I was like, all right, billions of people wear billions of lipsticks every day. Why don't we start harnessing this into one place? And as my mentor, he doesn't know this, but Richard Branson, I love Richard Branson. I love his sense of fun and initiative and doing good and doing good business. Like I love everybody winning in his ecosystem. He just is such a fun loving spirit. So he's my mentor. And he said, every good business is born out of a sense of frustration. Because if you're not born out of a sense of frustration, like there's no point. And
right.
So I got so frustrated with all the crap that I bought or returned or whatever. And I said, this is just so wasteful, that I decided to do something about it. And I had this visual idea of how to do it. And we decided to start with makeup because, A, there have been some personal reasons that I wanted to find the perfect makeup. But, B, it is something that's relatively universal, right? The vast majority of women wear makeup. It's a low price point. They get multiples of them. And and then we come to find out that 90% of American women watch beauty videos. And so you couldn't talk about makeup without talking about the beauty videos. And then that came together to be a two-sided marketplace, which is what we are, where you can really you can get personalized, detailed information about the products. Are they shiny, sparkly, moisturizing, easy to apply? All the stuff that really matters, and have it be personalized to you with your coloring, your sensitivities, your preferences. You know, what's your skin type? Do you want sunscreen, et cetera, et cetera? So having a really personalized user experience with the fan wins, but also the creators. Earlier this year, creators lost a lot of ad revenue. 99% of creators lost revenue overnight because of the adpocalypse when YouTube changed its algorithm.
Oh.
And so the creators, I mean, I spoke on this at a conference a couple months ago about creator revenue. They're mad and angry, and they feel completely devalued because YouTube did this, and so they're looking for a new way of making money. So anyway, when we designed WeSearch, we really wanted to do good and help people and help creators make money. We'll make money in the process. But as you mentioned, there's absolutely a social component, and that component is the environment.
Right.
Today, beauty products are the third most returned item. And so when I was doing my research for WeSearch, again, I'm a big researcher, so I was like, let's look at what the problems really are. And I found that beauty products, again, they're the third most returned item. But unlike, say, clothes or electronics, you can't resell them due to hygiene reasons.
Right.
You wear the makeup, and it's now got bacteria and fingerprints and whatever else on there. But and so you can't resell it. And so they just get thrown in the trash. And they fill up our landfills and all that. And I was like, billions of people are wearing billions of products. Why don't we harness that knowledge into one place? I mean, something that may work for you may not work for me, and vice versa, or it can work for both of us, or what have you. But let's get that out there. I mean, people want to be beautiful. They want these great products, but why don't we just stop the guesswork and let people know what they're really getting? And that was the idea behind WeSearch.
Which is really cool. The beauty industry is so ripe now for innovation. And I feel like this whole big trend has just been happening, especially with, like, the exploding of, like, blogging and vlogging, you know, from, like, the mid-2000s up. And as you were saying, it was interesting because, to me, consumers no longer needed a third-party outlet. So, for instance, I might have to write a letter to Glamour magazine to tell them, you know what, I tried your tips and this is what happened. I didn't even have to have a third party anymore. I could go online, plug in my computer, and I could talk directly to my peers. And to me, that's a really powerful thing. And what you're talking about, you know, the changes in YouTube and advertising, how can creators make money at WeSearch? So I run a really fantastic beauty blog. I review things. How does WeSearch work for me?
Yes. So it is coming in September. Will be our first way for creators to make money. And this new feature is going to be beauty consultations. So where you can have a live consultation, you know, teach me how to get the smoky eye or the winged eyeliner, or how do I use highlighter? Because I'm, believe it or not, I still don't know how to use highlighter, but let alone contour. But anyway,
I Google all this stuff as I
but I have some experts that I should just watch their videos and figure it out that I work with. But anyway, so creators first will be able to do consultations. So we'll match them with beauty fans who want to, you know, pay them to, hey, spend some time with me and teach me how to do this for me. Because I can watch your video all day, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, your eye shape may not be my eye shape or whatever. Or, you know, I got a really wide bridge on my nose. You don't. How do I make that look, you know, differently? So anyway, that is going to be the first way, and we'll have some neat AR special effects for creators to connect with their fans and do it through WeSearch. And, you know, it's not like it'll be a web experience, and there's no giving away of, you know, any private phone numbers. You can have to FaceTime or whatever. And we'll have, you know, ways to draw on the picture so you can really understand how it'll be fun. How people can really get the makeup knowledge they need. And then they've got that, in their hip pocket. They can replay it and use it at any time. So once you've done that, you can say, oh, how did they do that? You know, sometimes you go to the department store or Sephora or whatever, they teach you how to do something, and then you get home and you're like, yeah, I don't remember what she said. How do I need to do that?
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, so that's the first way. The second way through live streaming. And there's a lot of live streaming sites out there that definitely have beauty creators, but no one is doing it with the detailed product knowledge that we have. Not Darby Smart, not Sephora for sure, not Meet Me, et cetera. And so we want to encourage that connection through the basic system of, you know, subscriptions to get special content, AR special effects. Maybe it's, you know, you wave your magic makeup brush and some special effect happens and people can engage with creators that way, as well as just basic patronage. And
right.
We want creators to make money from their craft and be able to monetize their base and to keep them going. I mean, let's face it, for centuries, people have gotten patronage from people to keep going, even if it's not necessarily a straight transaction. And we want to help
right.
support beauty creators because they do make the world a more beautiful place. And so that's how we see it happening. Everybody wins at WeSearch.
That is really exciting. I know that you just said, obviously, that you're opening that new feature up in September. But,
yeah.
I mean, on the if somebody goes to research right now on YouTube, you have some bloggers that you're working with. Are they on your team? Are these people that you outsource to? Talk a little bit about the people that they could currently find if they went to research on YouTube right now, because you have there's really some good personalities on there.
Yes, yes. We have a wonderful team of creators. We've got three team members that, like, on, I'll say staff, that we work with that do regular amount of videos. Howard Reese is our in-house vlogger or in-house creator. Oh, yeah, I like the word vlogger, and sometimes I slip and say that. Anyway, he's our in-house video creator, and then Gabrielle Sorrell is in charge of our beauty videos, and Carly Ann Warden is head of our marketing efforts, and all three of them are video creators doing regular videos about makeup, how it looks, where it feels, where occasions, et cetera, et cetera. And so they're our core team, but we work with another 12 or 15 creators that have some wonderful talent, and they all do beauty videos with us. And some of them, I mean, even some of the videos that they have tagged, so this is how creators work, and they're found by other people in our system, is they just tag the products. So the products are easily searchable, and then people can find them.
Uh-huh.
So then I'm served up creators who look like me or have similar skin types as me or whatever, because then I'm going to have a much better chance at doing what I need to be doing. And so, again, it's making things much more personal instead of YouTube, and you just look for, you know, tell me about this MAC lipstick, and then, you know, there's 500 different ones, and, you know, you have no idea if they're if the hydration that you want on your lips is the same as what they want, right?
Or even look the same. I've hurt my own feelings that way.
Totally.
Try something, this is going to look amazing, and then I'm like, I look like a clown, and she looks amazing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. This did not work for me.
Yeah.
So creators today can connect their videos with the products in their videos, and then that's how people can find them. But as I said, we work with a couple on our core team, and then about 12 on our greater team, and we have meetings with them every other week. And we give them ways to be involved. We talk about what's happening in the makeup industry. They can be featured on WeSearch in a number of different ways, on our social media, do some videos. A lot of the videos that we have on YouTube right now are review videos.
Mm-hmm.
And we have paid for every product in those reviews. We get no free product because we want credibility and honesty to rule the day. And so while we would be happy to work with brands who want to give us that, we also believe that everyone should know that, hey, we're going to tell the real story about how this works,
mm-hmm.
not just going to be like, oh, this is great because they just paid me a bunch of money to feature this. That's not
right.
who we are.
Right.
And that's not going to change. So anyway, so that's how we work with creators. But they're a wonderfully talented group of people who are passionate about makeup, and they're also very passionate about what we believe, which is everyone has the right to be their most beautiful selves. And you can see how diverse our creator team is. I mean, we've got men, we've got women, we've got all different colors, shapes, sizes.
Yeah.
And we want everyone to be their most beautiful selves. That's just really kind of what we're all about. And then, as I said, also believe in making the world a better place through makeup being used as it should be, which is by the people who it's really going to work for and not torn in landfills. So
right.
those missions really resonate with them. And we're very blessed to have them. Again, they're a fabulous group.
Yeah, and so important and necessary. There was that video that was circulating on social media. I don't know if it was off the coast of India. Did you see that video? It was just like trash, trash in the ocean. And
yeah,
so the work that you're doing is really, really important in terms of helping to cut down on that type of waste, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know how this would work, but it's our hope ultimately that beauty products, in addition to, of course, helping the environment and keeping a lot more out of landfills and so on. And some of the brands are really leading the way with having, you know, more biodegradable packaging and stuff like that, which
mm-hmm.
would help. But it's ultimately our hope in research that the brands start to wake up with what really matters to people, and they produce really good quality stuff, not just a bunch of crap that has a neat packaging.
Right.
So that would be, yeah.
To me, is what is exciting about research, because I think sometimes we try to find solutions for things after the problem, and I feel like mm-hmm. the work that you're doing is attacking it up front. Okay, let me get really specific about what I'm trying to buy so it's the
exactly.
best fit for me, so I'm not running into issues. I applaud you and thank you for doing that. I think it's just really good work.
Yay! Well, it's free, so anyone who wants to go on, please go check it out. Just all it takes is a couple of swipes. Literally, you can enter half your makeup drawer in a matter of a minute or two.
Yeah, and I can attest to the fact that it's really user-friendly. I went on there and poked around, and it was like, oh, it's very intuitive, the website.
Yay.
So
oh, good.
I listen to go and check it out for sure. I got to ask you these two questions, because I think when we have an idea and we want to bring it to fruition, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that can hold you up. And then
yes.
There's so many things that once you kind of get the ball rolling that can stop you. So when you knew, okay, I had this idea for research and I actually want to do something about it, what was the first thing you did? And after you got that ball rolling, what resources did you tap into to keep going?
That's a great, great question. So my husband had been hearing me talk about research, the concept, for a long time. And he said, okay, are you finally going to – I don't want you to talk about it anymore. I want you to do something about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you throw me a challenge. I'm a Texas girl, right? You throw me a challenge, I'm going to go, okay. I'll show you.
And then you enjoy steak after, okay?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So I was like, okay, I'm finally going to sit down and do that. But it really took me bouncing the idea off a couple of people that I really respect and who have some very good business savvy. That when I finally had the courage to do that and present it in more of a encapsulated elevator pitch way, and they were like, you've got something there.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get it. You have something there and you should go forward. So, you know, make sure you tap into people, not just, you know, your besties or whatever, but people who have a really good business background behind them and bounce it off them.
Right.
So that you can say, is this a viable idea or not?
Mm-hmm.
And then what started happening is I I was not working at the time because my son was 3 years old, but I was getting the itch, right? I was starting to go, okay, I really want to start using my work brain again. Mm-hmm. And so I disciplined myself to be working on it pretty much every day. It's for starters. Yeah. This is before we started spending any money. This was just getting it into the, making the idea a reality product mm-hmm. concept.
Right.
And so I spent time on it, you know, pretty much every workday. And one of my my advisors that I mentioned I did talk to, she's also a partner on research, Jenny Lovelace, she said, well, let's have a weekly meeting. And I was like, great. That is going to get me, like, I'm great for deadlines. And that helps me keep going. You know, it's kind of like cramming for a test. If I didn't have to cram, I wouldn't get all my studying in. But same with work to a point is if I have a deadline, it focuses the mind and you keep going. And so we put some structure around it. And then I kept talking to people and the team grew. We got our co-founder, Chandra Nagaraja, to devise the architecture to make this mm-hmm. a reality. And he is a non-makeup wearer. But he does have a mom and a couple of sisters and a wife and, you know, women in his life.
Yeah.
And he got it and bounced it off his wife. And so he got it. So keep talking to people whose business acumen you respect and see about the idea because, you know, people like me, you know, sometimes I'll talk to other co-founders or founders that are not quite as far along as we are. And then mm-hmm. I enjoy spitballing, you know, just kind of, you know, poking around different ideas, thinking about what they're doing. And that helps keep my brain sharp and exercised so that when I'm working on research, I can keep going. So bounce off people and get your, get a discipline and accountability with somebody else where you mm-hmm. keep going. But even like some days, you know, I will feel very unmotivated. I'm feeling like, gosh, we're, you know, our traction is not moving forward or whatever. And I feel like, mm-hmm. you know, we're kind of at a plateau. And even just talking to other female founders who are on your journey too,
yes,
really is so valuable. And
yeah,
you know, I'll be having a down day and she'll be having an up day. She's like, come on, you can do it. You know what you're talking about. You're the expert. You know, even that just helps me go, okay, I can keep going. I just need someone else to tell me that.
Yeah.
Because when you're an entrepreneur, and I'm sure you know this, Natasha, you know, you're always outputting. You know, you're pushing things out all the time and pushing out and pushing. And sometimes you're just tapped, you know, and you have to get some input from other people to help you do that. Or even, you know, if your target market, go talk to some people in your target market. Go to a Sephora. Like for us, it'd be like, go to a Sephora, go to an Ulta, talk to some people about what they're doing, watch what they do and how they do it. And even just, you know, talk to people and reinforce your core mission. What are you trying to accomplish? And that's
also re-energizes your spirit as an entrepreneur,
right?
When you're talking about you feel down, you feel isolated, you have those days where you're like, why the hell am I doing this again? And it's like, you talk to somebody. That's just also why I love talking to female founders. You feel so re-energized.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know you're not alone. It's, you know, it's not because you suck. It's not because you've done anything wrong. It's just that you may not be moving how you want to move yet, but hang in there. You know, women, we love to connect and talk, and that's part of our gift of who we are. And so having that camaraderie is so important to our souls just as a whole. And that's really huge. And then the other thing I would say is walk away sometimes.
Mm. Okay.
Go away, go do something else, go do something creative. You know, for you, is it cooking? Is it painting? Is it I'm going to go on a nature walk? It could be anything. For me, sometimes I sew. And every once in a while, I'll sew a little project. And part of that, I think, frankly, is I'm creating, and I can completely control the outcome.
Yes. Yep.
And there's something very empowering about that. And then I can go back, and that's nourished my soul, right? That's done something coming in. And then you can recharge a little bit to go push out again.
Oh, yeah. So such good advice. It's funny because my co-founder will even say, hey, it could just re-energize her to work in a different space. If she goes,
yeah.
You know what, I'm not working out of my office or my home today. I'm going to go work at a satellite place. And it could just, it has a different energy, you know?
Exactly.
A break from your routine. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to mix it up.
So what else do you have? So you're launching this for creators, that piece, next month. Are there other goals and things that you're looking forward to for the remainder of 2018 before, you know, the new year kicks off? I can't even believe we're entering that part of the year, but we are.
I know. As summer comes to a close, it's like, oh, my gosh, then it's like a month.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned before, we are significantly ramping up our fundraising. So fundraising is a big piece for us.
Mm-hmm.
We are also going to do a couple of exciting marketing pieces, which I'm very thrilled about. One is we've started doing a whole lot more live streaming, even though our live streaming piece has not been completely built yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we've started doing it more elsewhere, so that's been really positive. Our blog has launched, and Carly Ann Warden is in charge of that. So that's been that's exciting, and we're trying to get the word out a little bit more about WeSearch and more about our mission there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to do something that's really new and exciting. I'm trying to see if when does this come out, Natasha?
This will probably run in mid to late September.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and say it. So we are launching the Video Creator Awards.
Very awesome and exciting.
Yes, we're so excited. So you're hearing this on the QT right now. But yeah, we want to, again, reward creators of all shapes and sizes for their craft. And we are going to be having the awards, and it'll be connecting, you know, they'll need to connect their videos and products and research to do it, of course,
mm-hmm.
but having people vote, and we'll be giving away some Sephora gift cards and all that. But then the grand prize will be a trip to go to BeautyCon next year. But basically, we want to give beauty creators all the ability to level the playing field. I mean, you were talking about this earlier. A big part of what WeSearch's mission is to really democratize the beauty space. Every voice matters, every product, every brand. You know, a lot of stores only or sites only do X amount of products, or they don't have the credibility because the brands buy in advertising or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be completely transparent and have also creators matter. So even if they have 500 followers, but they're doing some beautiful work, like let's let them compete with the big boys and girls and really go out and make make their craft known and spread the word, which is what we're really excited about.
Which is just so exciting because you see that, like I said before, you know, they're able to communicate directly with their audience. They don't need that middle man, that middle media outlet. And I have watched, like I have followed bloggers, some of their careers, like a Gabby Fresh is a good example. You're doing clothes, you're doing it on your own website,
mm-hmm.
and you have such a following and a force that now the Vogues, the Glamours, they have no choice but to come to you to say, hey, we want you to come and have a column or do a feature here to talk about, to share your expertise. You know what I'm saying? Because it starts to be we have to go out to these people because they are leading that innovative space, that voice, you know, that's exciting to me.
And the reality, again, like getting a much more real story, you know, about there that people want to hear those voices, not just
not just the marketers making a pretty ad. And again, I'm a marketer. I know how that goes.
Yeah. Very exciting. So obviously to find out more about WeeSearch, they can go to WeeSearch.com. Is there anywhere else that you would like them to check out? Whether it's your
We would love people to, of course, check out our social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Of course, just WeeSearch, because searching should be fun. We're also, one other thing I forgot to mention is we're going to be heading into skincare, hair, nails, and fragrance this fall. So get ready, because we want to make sure that the whole beauty ecosystem is covered.
Yeah, and now see, that to me is like really exciting, because I always go on YouTube for the hair tutorials, but again, like, you're looking crazy the next day, because that particular person I might have been watching, we don't have the same exact hair texture. And so the idea that I can go to your platform and plug those specifics in, that will be a game changer for how we follow our favorite people. That's really interesting.
It's coming. So get ready, and please come add your voices, because it's only by everyone's voices and their particular sensitivities, coloring preferences, et cetera, that will make this really powerful for everybody.
Awesome. Hillary, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here today on Amplified. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Natasha. This has been fun.
It's been a pleasure. And to our listeners, you know that you can always check out more about WeeSearch or the next Amplified issue right over at lionessmagazine.com. As always, unleash the lioness within and rock the day.